Viraktaschandriyarato Bhakti Yogena Bhuyasa Tam Nirantara Bhavena Bhaje Tada Vimuktaye Viraktaschandriyarato Bhakti Yogena Bhuyasa Tam Nirantara Bhavena Bhaje Tada Vimuktaye Virukti means renunciation. And Virukti, what is Virukti? No idea. Virakta cha. Completely renounced order of life. Indriya rato. In the matter of sense gratification. Bhakti yogena. By the process of devotional service. Bhuyasa, with great seriousness, tam, unto him, the Supreme, nirantara, constantly, 24 hours daily, bhavena, in the topmost stage of ecstasy, bhajita, must worship, Ada, directly, Vimuktaye, for liberation. Translation. If one is very serious about liberation, he must stick to the process of transcendental loving service, engaging 24 hours a day in the highest stage of ecstasy, and he must certainly be aloof from all activities of sense gratification. Purport. There are different stages of perfection according to the different person's objectives. Generally, people are karmis, for they engage in activities of sense gratification. Above the karmis are the jnanis, who are trying to become liberated from material entanglement. Yogis are still more advanced because they meditate on the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And above all, these are the devotees who simply engage in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. They are situated seriously on the topmost platform of ecstasy. Here Dhruva Maharaj is advised that if he has no desire for sense gratification, that he should directly engage himself in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. The path of apavarga, or liberation, begins from the stage called moksha. In this verse, the word vimuktaye, for liberation, is especially mentioned if one wants to be happy within this material world. He may aspire to go to the different material planetary systems where there is a higher standard of sense gratification. But real moksha or liberation is performed without any such desire. This is explained in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by the term anyabhilasita sunyam, without desire for material sense gratification. For persons who are still inclined to enjoy material life in different stages or on different planets, the stage of liberation in bhakti yoga is not recommended. Only persons who are completely free from the contamination of sense gratification can execute bhakti yoga or the process of devotional service very purely. The activities on the path of apavarga up to the stages of dharma, artha, and kama are meant for sense gratification. But when one comes to the stage of moksha, the impersonalist liberation, the practitioner wants to merge into the existence of the Supreme. But that is also sense gratification. When one goes above the stage of liberation, however, he at once becomes one of the associates of the Lord to render transcendental loving service. That is technically called vimukti. For this specific vimukti liberation, Narada Muni recommends that one directly engage himself in devotional service. The impersonalist is considering this material energy to be false. But the devotee, he knows very well that the material energy is real. Therefore, for the impersonalist, liberation is the only option. Somehow or other, we are here in this material world. And for the material, for the Impersonalist liberation is the only way to overcome the material energy, to become free from it. So his aim is to somehow or other get out of this material world, out of this state of illusion. And therefore, for him, there is nothing positive in the material world. The impersonalist basically finds himself in an ocean of negativity. And in the midst of that ocean of negativity, he has to somehow or other, through some process, get out of there, and then he'll merge into an ocean of positive experience. That's it. That's all. But for the devotee, the material energy is real, and it is the energy of Krishna, and therefore it is to be engaged in the service of Krishna. Therefore, Maya is meant to be engaged in the service of Krishna. And that is a very significant point, because that basically makes a devotee active. The impersonalist, by nature, would be inclined to be inactive. Why would he bother with anything in this material world? So his mood would be to turn away from anything and everything and to become inactive. But the devotee must be very active. So that is difficult for the lazy conditioned souls of this age of Kali, right, who are not accustomed to work so hard. Because in this age, hard work is so troublesome. Right? The thought of it alone makes one tired. What to speak of actually having to do it? Work? Is it really necessary? So, therefore, sometimes we find that people find that this movement is too taxing, this movement of Lord Chaitanya. And I must admit that when I first came to this movement, after 1 month, right, it was inspiring, but also very exhausting. It was totally exhausting. There was so much activity in a day, there was just no end to it. It was just going on, right, from the time you rise so early in the morning, a huge morning program, you know, that's a day's work in itself, and then a whole day service, and then a whole evening program, and then after that, a temple commander to tell you about the last kitchen cleanup. It was just inconceivable, the amount of activity. So devotional service is active. And in the, gradually, we get energy from our spiritual practices. Gradually, we see how the advanced devotees become enlivened by devotional service. And that that enlivenment in devotional service carries them beyond material limitations, beyond fatigue, beyond stress, beyond any type of material state of being. On the physical plane, we may experience fatigue and disease, and on the mental plane, we may experience stress. But on the spiritual plane, we experience enlivenment. And this is the actual answer to overcome these things. Of course, it cannot be artificially done. Right? We used to hear sometimes lectures where it was stated that being tired is illusion. Right? Being tired, it's Maya, it's illusion. And you go like, wow. Right? Just after you were totally exhausted from the latest Sankirtan marathon, that would be the line, you know. Fatigue is Maya. Maya. But it is a fact that on the transcendental platform, by being enlivened, one can even overcome material fatigue. Not that it's not there, and not that at times, one also has to pay attention to the needs of the body. Srila Prabhupada would also rest, but nonetheless he showed extraordinary ability to ignore the ordinary needs of the body. And although he was an old man, he was going way beyond what an ordinary person could do. So, on the strength of being enlivened, that is one of the factors. The other factor is the Krishna factor. The Krishna factor is to be calculated that if we are rendering service to Krishna and Krishna is pleased, then he can give us energy. He can empower us to overcome limitations as well. So it is on the strength of these two elements that the devotee is on the strength of his own enthusiasm, on the strength of being enlivened by devotional service, and on the strength of the empowerment of Krishna, that a devotee can perform superhuman tasks. Mukham karoti vachanam pangam langayate girim. The lame can cross mountains, the dumb can recite eloquent poetry, the blind can see stars in the sky, and so on, by the special mercy of the Supreme Lord. So devotional service is therefore beyond liberation. Devotional service does not require liberation, because devotional service is not dependent on any time, place, or circumstance. Devotional service, bhakti, is completely independent. So it is said that the bhakti creeper, which sprouts from the seed of devotional service, that creeper grows right through the various atmospheres and strata of the material realm, and that then it reaches the Brahma Jyoti, and that it will grow right through the Brahma Jyoti all the way past the Vaikuntha planets until it reaches Golok, and there that creeper embraces the lotus feet of the Lord and becomes firmly fixed there. And it says that all along the way, that creeper doesn't require any support. Whereas ordinarily, creepers, they grow on walls, they grow on trees, and so on. It's like when you are in Bengal, many of the plants that we have here inside, indoors, in our room, they exist there in huge form. Right? And many of these creepers, you see them growing on trees, and so on, in natural setting. But the bhakti lata is not dependent on any support. Therefore, this point is evidence. It is evidence that we, in devotional service, do not require liberation. Because bhakti does not depend on any material conditions. Bhakti can be fully realized in any condition of life, or in any situation in life. And it is rather a matter of how one applies himself to the process. So from that point of view, there is no need to actually leave any situation. One can, in any given situation, be 100% Krishna conscious. Still, in the beginning, it is recommended that one sthanam sthiti Shruti Gatam Vanamanabir, that one may in the beginning stay in the place where he is. Srila Prabhupada explains that means situated within Varnashram, in the place where he is. And according to that position in Varna Ashram, one may serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But this is the not the desired stage of serving. Because the desired stage of serving is sarva upadhi vinir muktam tat paratvena nirmalam, to be free from all upadhis. Upadhis means designation, and therefore naham vipra natya narapatir na pivaishya na sudra naham varni natya griha na patir na nova nasta yatir va kintanu prujan nikila paramananda ritabde gopi bhaktapada kamala yadasana dasana das. So In this verse, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was stating, I'm not a Vaishya, not a Sudra, nor a Brahmana, nor a Kshatriya. I'm not a Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasi. In this way, he was referring to not being situated anywhere in Varna Ashram, but simply being the servant. So the difference is that when one is simply in that spirit of being the servant of Krishna, then one is acting for the pleasure of Krishna. Therefore, it is stated in the Narada Pancharatra, Rishikena Rishikesa Sevanam Bhakti Uchate, that we serve the senses of the Lord. We are interested in pleasing the senses of the Lord. And we use, in this material world, the material energy for the purpose of the Lord. And the more we do so, the more that material energy will reveal its actual identity as being spiritual. And the more we use the material energy in the service of Krishna, the more the spiritual world becomes revealed. It is stated that Sarva Kalavidam Brahma, that Brahman is all-pervading. Everything is Brahman, basically. Everything is Brahman. But then it said, Brahmanam Pratistaham, Brahman rests on me, Krishna says. I am the basis of Brahman. That is a fact. Krishna is the origin of Brahman as well. And therefore, the impersonalist, he is seeing everywhere Brahman. But the devotee, he sees everywhere Krishna. Stavara jammaga jangama dekena dekitara murti sarvata haya nija istadeva spurti. The devotee, he sees the moving or the non-moving beings, and wherever he looks, he always sees Krishna. And this is the purpose of all our spiritual practices. Smartavyam satatam vishnur vismartavyo najatusit. To somehow or other, always remember Krishna and never forget him. That is the purpose of all the rules and regulations. Or one could say, that is the purpose of all endeavor, of anything we do. If it doesn't help us to remember Krishna, then what is the benefit? Now sometimes we feel, yes, but before I can remember Krishna, I first have to do many preliminary things. I have to make many adjustments because, unfortunately, my mind is so contaminated that I cannot remember Krishna. Therefore, let me first overcome all the contamination that I have. I am suffering from contamination with fear. I'm suffering from contamination with ambition and pride. I'm suffering from contamination with dishonesty. I'm suffering from contamination with greed and so on. One can look at various types of contamination and one may think, I need to first purify myself before I can be Krishna conscious. But that is not actually our process. Our process is be Krishna conscious immediately. Right? Be Krishna conscious even if you have a crippled mind. Even if the mind doesn't work, just use that that crippled, crooked mind in remembering Krishna and in serving Krishna. Right? And then that mind will be purified automatically. By the association of Krishna and the remembrance of Krishna becomes stronger and stronger. Said, no, but isn't it also that in Krishna consciousness we must make a conscious endeavor to purify ourselves from anarthas? Yes, we must. But that is the secondary activity. That is the secondary activity to help the purification to go even faster and even better. But all the conscious endeavors to make adjustments in our personality will fail. They're doomed to fail. Man. If we are making it our business to be very good moral people, and to never speak a lie. We can be very conscious and check ourselves and be very careful to speak the truth, no lies out of convenience, and just be very honest and even get ourselves in trouble, right? How many times did we break something because we didn't handle it proper, right? Because we handled it too rough, right? Like I broke the harmonium. Let's see, it's not the first one, I must say. One time there was a harmonium and I was on the stage playing on it and all the black keys started to fly off one after another. Just and one after another, more and more black keys were flying off. So, and the owner was sitting next to me. He said, he told me after, at that time I took a solemn vow that I would never ever let Kadambu Kananas well play on my harmonium again. What can I say? I'm sorry. I'm a little heavy-handed sometimes. But the tendency is there when these things happen, when we're alone, to say, it just broke. Right? I don't know, it just broke. Right? Not I broke it. No, it just broke. Okay, but you must have done something. No, no, it just broke. Right? How many times have we said, right? How many times have we presented the circumstances a little bit in our favor? So the best lie, right? The best way to lie, I'll teach you today. Right? The best way to lie is not to speak untruth because they can catch you. The best way to lie is to twist the truth. Right? Because, then it's still truth, right? And it's just a matter of interpretation, So if someone says, no, that's not true, then they just understood it wrong. Right? That's all, But it happened, you see. And whether you broke it or it broke, that's the same. That's just a matter of perspective. Yeah? Where you're from. So, in that way, that's not lying, you see. That's the truth. You got it now? And in this way, we can so easily get entangled in a network of lying and misrepresenting the facts. And this will entangle us in a network of pretense. And as long as we are in this network of pretense, this is known as the anatta, which is described as kutinati. And this kutinati, it is said to pretend. It is also saying to look for recognition. Right? And it also says a business mentality. So how are these three coming together, right? These three different meanings of kutinati. Pretend, looking for honor, and business mentality. Well, if one pretends, it means that we want to be something else than what we are. And it basically means that we try to get something more. We're looking for special benefits. We're thinking, well, the way I am is not good enough and the results from that may not be favorable. So we are very result-oriented and are looking always for the better result. And for that, we are ready to pretend. And therefore, it's a business mentality because ultimately, we're looking for profit. So therefore, kutinati is one of the contaminations of the mind. And one could make a serious endeavor to overcome it. And it's very difficult because one slips into old habits and it happens again and again. So we may be very, very conscious to avoid it, but it may be difficult to be successful. So we are trying to avoid it in Bhakti Yoga. But this is only to help us. Just as when you have a fracture, just rest won't do. Right? But rest is essential. Right? If you have a fracture, you have to actually set the bone. Right? It's inevitable, you have to set the bone. Otherwise, just rest won't do. Right? But if you don't rest, then it can't heal properly. So In the same way, we have to actually make the adjustment, set our broken connection with Krishna. And once we have set the broken connection with Krishna properly, and we are again situated in devotional service, that is, then we are properly situated. But then additionally, we also have to overcome the behavior of a conditioned soul and renounce the behavior of a conditioned soul and make a conscious endeavor to renounce that so that the so that Krishna consciousness can very rapidly purify us. But even if we don't make the conscious endeavor, if we're engaged in devotional service, still we will be purified. I think it's in the purport to Tesam Satatam Yuktanam Tadami Buddhi Yogam Tam. I think it's there. Where Srila Prabhupada is mentioning that a disciple should follow the good instructions of his spiritual master and of Krishna. Said, but even if he doesn't do that, as long as he's sincere, Krishna will personally take away whatever impediments there are. So then Krishna will do it. So there are a few interesting points in there that, like, number one, that a disciple who is supposed to follow the instructions of his spiritual master, then one who is not doing it, if he is sincere, so how can one who is not following the instructions of the spiritual master be sincere? Right? Well, it's not talking about someone who doesn't care at all about the instructions of the spiritual master, but it is speaking about one who, due to bad habits, has difficulty in following the instructions of the spiritual master. And due to his stubbornness, keeps on deviating a little and keeps on stretching what is allowed, and who is like always, who is not in the spirit of what we discussed yesterday. Yesterday, we made the point that an advanced devotee, the topmost devotee, he experiences the presence of the spiritual master in every atom of his existence. Now, so that is advanced surrender. Then there is something else. Then there is our nature and the desire of the spiritual master, and then the inner struggle, trying to conform to the desire of our spiritual master, the inner struggle with what we feel we want to be, and what our spiritual master wants us to be, and the dilemma where we feel, I am what I am, what can I do? I have my particular personality and my nature, and then what he wants us to be, and the conflict that can arise out of that. Right? That's all a guru-disciple relationship on a less advanced level. And on the less advanced level, therefore, there may be moments that a disciple is sincere and yet not following the order of his spiritual master. And it may be a prolonged, continuous matter. It may be on a fundamental point, and that the disciple is just not making the adjustment that the spiritual master would like him to make, then Krishna will do it. Yeah. Krishna will make it. So in many cases, or practically in all of our cases, we can understand that it's a combination of all these factors. That we need Krishna to sometimes make arrangements. Of course, the arrangements that Krishna makes, you never know what they're going to be like. Right. Krishna's arrangements are sometimes very sweet, sometimes sometimes a great personality just appears from nowhere. Some devotee comes. I also experienced that at times I was struggling, and then Krishna sent some devotee, sent some senior devotee who just came for a couple of weeks, and just came at a time when I needed it, right? When I needed someone to kind of boost me up. So Krishna looks after us like this. Krishna makes arrangements. Krishna gives us association. Krishna gives us inspiration, and we must take it like that. We must always... A devotee, therefore, is not so fixed in his plan. I have my plan, and it's carved in stone, and that's what I'm going to do, right? And this is how I'm going to practice my spiritual life, because I've got my plan. It's good. We must have a plan. It is good to have a plan in Krishna consciousness. Of how are we going to be Krishna conscious tomorrow? How are we going to be Krishna conscious next year? How are we going to be Krishna conscious in 10 years from now? How are we going to be Krishna conscious in our old age? How are we going to do it? So it's good to have a plan and to think about these things. But then, along the way, Krishna comes, and Krishna, he will reveal how he wants things to go. And we have to adjust according to Krishna, because our plans, they sometimes they work so well. Right? It's just amazing. Right? Sometimes so effortlessly, something just is a big immediate success. You just amazed yourself, right? Or if we are a little more proud, then we think naturally, you know, after all, yeah, I did it after all, you know. So, naturally. But if we are a little more humble, then we will be surprised when success comes immediately without struggle. Because generally, success is struggle. But sometimes Krishna sends us indications again and again. And he may send us gentle reminders that maybe we should go in a different way. Maybe I should go in a different way. The more stubborn we are, the more Krishna will send us also other types of reminders. One time, Banu Maharaj in India was coming to meet us. There was some meeting, and he was supposed to come there, and we were all waiting for him, and he came late. And what happened was, his plane made an emergency landing in a field. Right? It was intense, right? Bang, 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 emergency landing on the field. It's not the kind of thing that happens every day. And when it does happen, obviously, it's kind of reminding us, well, it can be, don't get too comfortable. Don't get too sure about everything that we have achieved now, everything that is there. It can be gone in any moment. And are you ready? Are you really ready now? Are you ready to leave today? Are we ready to leave our body today? That is a big question, which a Vaishnava ought to ask himself from time to time. Just as Prabhupada stated, that we should chant as if it's our last moment. So, what can we say? We must be very prepared. And Krishna gives us reminders. So Krishna may, in various ways, indicate things to us, sweet and heavy. Therefore, the best thing is really to meditate upon that particular statement, that the topmost devotee is experiencing his spiritual master in every atom of his existence. I think it's one of those things you can hang on the wall and meditate on and try and work on. This is something I guess everyone has to work on, and everyone feels that he falls short, regardless who he is. I certainly very much I feel I'm very far from that that model, and that. But I find the statement inspiring, and I find that I ought to make an endeavor to make more of that relationship, because ultimately that's the essence in Krishna consciousness. That's where it will be successful, and that is the whole reason of our spiritual life, to somehow or other do that. Srila Prabhupada often said that one doesn't require to be a big scholar. One should simply 100% surrender to the order of the spiritual master. Such a difficult thing. And I think that that was the problem amongst Prabhupada's contemporaries, and I think it's the same problem that we are facing now in our movement. And we're just looking for ways to maintain our own independence. And that means that we are somewhere in the category of bhukti, mukti, or siddhi, that we are somewhere in the category of those who are looking for material enjoyment, or of those who are looking for liberation, or of those who are looking for special power to control the material energy. So who are looking for siddhi. Yeah. And these three are the basic driving forces in us. And then we are dealing with that. Yeah. So, if there's anything that holds us back from this surrender, then it's the it's the desire to enjoy the material energy, or Srila Bhakti, and Srila Bhakti said that the desire to retire, the desire to enjoy, the desire to retire, and the desire to lord it over. And it are these things that are causing us to remain at a distance from our spiritual master. And the result is always that we remain attached to sense gratification, and therefore that we are continuing to add fuel to the fire. And therefore we ultimately will be plagued again with sex desire. That will then surface. That is the ultimate result of this this distance. That sex desire, we may be able to regulate it, we may be able to control it by taking shelter of the process, but it will plague us. It will harass us. So the more we are overcoming this tendency of independence, the more we overcome ultimately sex desire, which is our problem, actually. That's the problem. If there was no sex desire, then everything was very simple. But where there's sex desire, there is so much suffering. It is sex desire that leads to suffering. And if somehow or other we overcome that through very purely practicing our spiritual life, then no more suffering. That's actually where all suffering ends, if one becomes free from sex desire. But sex desire ultimately means me, my enjoyment. And the slightest tendency for my enjoyment, my will, my personal idea, that will ultimately be the seed of sex desire. Just as we spoke in the beginning of the lecture about the seed of bhakti, and how from the seed of bhakti a creeper will grow, It is also stated in the Madhya Lila Chaitanya Charitamrita 19th chapter, where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructs Rupa Goswami that besides the bhakti creeper, there are also many other seeds that fructify. So the dynamics of seeds that fructify and creepers that grow from these seeds are there. And not only in bhakti, but also in material activities. And therefore, we should understand that the tendency for slight material enjoyment, slight tendency, is the seed for more, and more will ultimately translate into sex. And this is the situation. And we're facing that. That is our greatest predicament. If that wasn't there, then Krishna consciousness wouldn't be so difficult. But that is ultimately what makes it so difficult, that we have to control sex desire. Because that is the one thing that it would have been easier if that would have not been part of it. That is the one thing that makes people hesitate about this movement. It is the one reason why people don't join in the millions. Right? If that wasn't there, right? many people would join, without a doubt. But sex desire is a very strong factor. So, therefore, we have no choice. We have no choice. And we have to, therefore, deeply meditate on how to become a better servant of the spiritual master. It's not just a matter of doing nice things, trying to do your best. No, servant means one has to adjust to the will of the spiritual master. See, we can have our own idea of how I'm going to be a good devotee. And we can have our own projection of the role of the good devotee. And then we can go play the pure devotee profile. Yeah. And we have whatever we've learned from scripture about pure devotee, we just try and act it out. Yeah. And then we think that we are a good disciple. Yeah. And we think we're a very good disciple when we're acting out the pure devotee profile. But no. Because the spiritual master may want something else from us. Right? And we were just in the middle of a very dramatic moment, in the middle of our pure devotee part, right? And with great devotion, we offered him a rose. And he says, roses, I don't want roses. My God, what's going on, I just bought all these roses. And he's just rejected the roses. Right? And then one has just spent months growing these roses. Right? One has personally watered these roses with his own tears. Right? Daily. These roses one has watered with the tears of bhakti. These roses one has sheltered from wind, rain, storm. And then they're offered to Guru Maharaj. And he rejects our offering. Heart is broken. So, it's not that we are good servants by serving him with what we think is a good offering. But we have to learn from him what a good offering is. Right? Again and again. And it may be different from what we think is good. Sometimes it may not be very much desirable at all. From our personal perspective. But yet, that is to be done. So this is not a small thing. And it's not like an intellectual adjustment where one makes a solemn declaration. From today on, I will surrender. On this Vyasa Puja, in my offering, I solemnly swear that from now on, I will surrender. Well, read your offering next year. Right?
Dear Guru Maharaj, although I last year promised to solemnly surrender, again I miserably failed another year, and even I didn't try so hard. What can I do? I'm so fallen. Please be merciful on your hopeless disciple, not even your real servant, simply trying to aspiring to be your servant, not even really aspiring yet, trying to aspiring to be your servant, right? And we can write the Asa Puja offerings in that way. Because to really become that servant means that we have to little by little make many small adjustments. Many, many small adjustments. Many small adjustments make a big one. Yeah, that's it. To dramatically make an announcement, I'm going to completely adjust my life, is a joke. Yeah. I did it the day I joined, and it was a joke. What can I say? We have to actually, step by step, fine-tune. And the more we try that, the more Krishna will reveal to us what the next step is. Someone complained to me and said, "You're never satisfied. You know, when I do what you say, then you come with the next demand." Right? Yes. Yes. That's how it is. It is like that. Yes. There's always a next step. There's always a next step. There's always more. And it is true. The spiritual master wants more. He wants increase. And not only the spiritual master, Krishna wants increase. Eternally so. That's why this whole separation business is going on. Right? Krishna just disappears from his dearmost devotees, breaks their heart, they're almost dying, just to, because he still wants more. Although they had already given everything, still he wants to increase the intensity of their surrender. Always more. So it's not so easy. Not so easy. It's not easy to please the spiritual master. Sometimes someone, now that I'm a spiritual master, I'm a new one on the block, of course, but now that I'm one, I'm getting some realizations, right? Naturally, get some experiences. So sometimes someone is acting in a way that reasonably, one could say, well, it's reasonably acceptable according to devotional standards, right? So the spiritual master ought to be pleased, right? And then, what if I'm not pleased? Right? So sometimes I'm wondering, you know, is it like, should I really be pleased? Or should it be that, like, you know, whatever is reasonably acceptable as a pleasing standard, you know, is good enough. Right? And no, it's, I should really be pleased. Right? I should really be pleased. The spiritual master should really be pleased. And it's like, it's not so easy, in other words. He has to... It's like, it's not even what's reasonable, you know. I came up to the reasonable standard, very acceptable for a devotee. I did better than the average devotee. I mean, it quite good according to the standard of the scripture, considering my condition, state, etc. I would deserve more than average, right? Maybe an 8+, you know. And still, he's not pleased, you know. Still, he's not pleased. It's unreasonable. It's unreasonable. The problem is that my spiritual master is unreasonable. Right? He's too demanding. He's too demanding. You know. It's like, but a spiritual master cannot be too demanding. It is not possible. Right? Even if he's very demanding, that's a blessing. That is a blessing. And so one must somehow or other accept it as it comes. So the art of the guru-disciple relationship is very intricate, and it requires a lot of work, and that is maybe the thrust of my presentation. It's not automatic, and it's not just by some mental adjustment, now I'm going to be a disciple. One has to really work to be a disciple. It's not a simple thing. And only then, if one is on the cutting edge in that relationship, if one is on the cutting edge in that relationship, then one is spiritually enlivened. But if one is not on the cutting edge in the relationship with one's spiritual master, then spiritual life is kind of on a low flame, and the inspiration is not, it's just not very high. And it's going on, and one may be nicely situated in an ashram, and in hearing and chanting and so on, but it's not really happening deep in one's heart. One must be on the cutting edge. It's not easy in the relationship with one's spiritual master. So now I'll stop. Any questions? Any comments? It's like eating old bread. And it's like we first want something fresh. If I have to begin with old bread, see, I may not eat old bread. If there's a lot of fresh bread, then I don't go for the old. But I'll first go for some fresh bread, then we'll see for the old. Yes.
I was wondering, to please the spiritual master, you have to know what he wants.
Yeah.
So sometimes you ask things and then he says, well, you can do this.
Yeah. So what does he want when he says you can do this and can do that? No, what does he want?
I don't know. Somebody told me you should make an intelligent choice.
Exactly. He wants that you become an independently thinking person who becomes strong and who can stand on his own legs and who can make his own Krishna conscious decisions in life. That's why he gives us choices and not orders. I mean, it's easy to give an order, do this, do that. But the thing is, then you get like totally dependent people. You know what to do. I forgot my mobile phone and I don't know what to do now. And I have to call my spiritual master urgently because I don't know what to do. And I have to ask him and I forgot my mobile phone. And what do I do? Huh? So this is not the... therefore the spiritual master may give us a choice. And if he gives us a choice, it means he wants us to make an intelligent choice. Well, of course he's watching. He gives us a choice, but he keeps an eye open if he sees you make the wrong choice. Prabhupada also, you know, like, would give his disciples independence and then 10 minutes later he would take it back, you know, right? And just interfere completely. I mean, he made the GBC and he gave them power, and when they made a wrong decision, he just cancelled the whole GBC, you know. From that, I'm in charge. He just made the whole GBC in charge, the whole system, and they were going to go, and bang, they had a meeting, and he didn't like it. Bang, cancelled all the resolutions, and like that. No, but Prabhupada very much also wanted his disciples to be independently intelligent. And therefore, he was against centralization, and therefore he wanted that like every place was run by local people and not by some central head office or anything like that. And ultimately every devotee, right? Every devotee has to be able to be what I call spiritually self-sufficient. Right? Spiritual self-sufficiency, it means that one must at least be able to, independent from association, apply the process of Krishna consciousness and derive from there a certain amount of inspiration to keep on going. That's what I call spiritual self-sufficiency, and that is required. Then beyond that, one may take inspiration from other personalities, from great personalities, and we are also dependent on that. And obviously our spiritual master and other great Vaishnavas, or we take inspiration. And we need those moments of inspiration. But spiritual self-sufficiency is a requirement. So that's why we get this choice, to become spiritually self-sufficient. Mm. Yeah.
Prabhupada and associated with the devotees, and no need to take initiation?
Well, no, I said you should also take inspiration, but you have to learn to become spiritually self-sufficient. So the initiation is there, and the instruction of the spiritual master is there. But then it's not that you are so dependent on it that you can't function without. Like, for example, he hasn't been here for 3 months, I'm gonna bloop. Oh God, I hope he's coming. I can't handle it any longer. And then you come and you dump all your problems, and then he has to fix it up as good as possible. It's like so many times, people think that they have to bring their problems to a spiritual master. Yes, I have a question, and then comes out some old problem that has been dusted off, it's been there for 20 years, but sort of like, well, maybe I have it, But that's not required, actually. Problems, they will go away automatically. The real thing is that we must somehow or other learn to be self-inspired. That's the idea. The idea is this, that the spiritual master, he takes us on the spiritual path and he shows us where different puddles of nectar are. He takes us to different sources of nectar. And he shows us there's a source of nectar. There's a source of nectar. Then we have to be able to go there and get some nectar. That's the point. Pravid.
What you were talking about seeing the spiritual master, you were, it's nice if you have a nice spiritual master, but if the spiritual master falls down or fell down.
If the spiritual master falls down or fell down, then you need to take shelter of senior Vaishnavas. Yeah. I mean, then you're in trouble. If your spiritual master fell down, then it's not that you just sit back and think, great, it's wonderful. Yeah? I'm still the eternal servant of Krishna. Yeah? It is a fact. When the spiritual master falls down, in one sense, nothing has changed because we are still the eternal servant of Krishna. But there is a problem. Because now we don't have the same protection and the same guidance of a spiritual master. So we need to look for protection then from senior Vaishnavas and then see what happens from there. But we should not be independent. So we should take some advice, and it doesn't have to be from one, it can be from several senior Vaishnavas, but we should take advice. We should consult them. We should not see, when your spiritual master falls down, what happens is, suddenly after many years, you have your independence back. And you begin to, again, rely on your own intelligence. And you're back with your own intelligence. And you start like making your own decisions again, what to do and what not to do. What is right, what is wrong. Whereas before, okay, your spiritual master may have given you some independence, but still it was in the greater context of what he liked and what he said. And he was keeping an eye, and you knew that, if I go too far in one direction, there may be some friction. Right? And so just even if he doesn't say anything, there's a checking element. But suddenly you're independent again, alone with your intelligence. So that's a difficult platform. Therefore, one should take shelter of senior Vaishnavas to at least consult and take advice.
Another question. So what to do once initiated, like you once born, your mother dies at the labor that you were born. Do you need to take, is it necessary to take another spiritual master once you made a link and vows for the fire?
Jiva Goswami said that one should take the mantra again, and also Bhaktivinoda Thakur has made such a statement. And these are the two statements that have been presented as the argument why one should take mantra again. The deeper reason, besides the quote, is that why not? Right? Why not? Leaving all our fear aside, what if he falls down again? Right? then what will I do? Right? Same thing. Take shelter again of Vaishnavas. The thing is this, when the spiritual master falls down, it's not the end of the world. It doesn't mean that the earth stops rotating right there and then, and at that day, everything, spiritual life has stopped. Everything goes on. But one's protection is less. Once I had this discussion with Jayadvaita Maharaj about this point. And the question was, is the connection broken? Right. So many times the discussion is there. And some would say the connection is not broken because the connection was established at the time of initiation and the vow is still standing. So the disciple has made the vow before Krishna and therefore he's taken initiation at that time, he's committed himself, he made that that lifetime commitment, and if he's ready to maintain it, then the connection is not broken. That's one argument. The argument that Maharaj presented was that it is broken. It is simultaneously broken and not broken. Yeah? It's like an electric wire which has many strands, and half of the strands are already broken, but some strands are still making connection. Yeah? It's like that, because the mercy of the spiritual master is now not there. Right? See, at the time of initiation, the disciple is making vows and is asked what these vows are and is clearly stating four regulative principles and 16 rounds and so on. The spiritual master is not making any solemn declaration, right? But he takes an equally solemn vow. And that vow is actually very heavy, because the disciple basically is stating that he will, for life, chant these 16 rounds, follow four regulative principles, and accept the orders of the spiritual master as absolute, and will follow them, right? Until or unless that spiritual master falls down, then he may reject him. But the spiritual master solemnly vows to do everything in his mind, in his might, to take that disciple back to Godhead, even if the disciple doesn't want any more. In other words, he doesn't even reject him. In Chaitanya Charitamrita it is said, glorious is that spiritual master who takes his disciples by the hair and drags them back to Godhead. Yeah. Yeah. So it's quite a heavy vow. It's actually a heavier vow than the vow that the disciple takes. Yeah.
If you're a Brahmin.
If you?
A Brahmin.
A Brahmin. Yeah.
Then if you're a fool, if you do your Gayatri, if your guru is fallen, what do you do?
Yeah. So, you know, if the guru is fallen, you're in an emergency situation. It is sort of like an interim situation. So one whose guru has fallen and is still acting as a pujari and a brahmana is in an interim situation, and he will just basically make his offerings on the strength of a prayer, which is, my dear Srila Prabhupada, right? My spiritual master has just fallen. I have not yet been able to make a connection with the current link in the Sampradaya, therefore kindly accept my offering. Yeah. And on the strength of that prayer, doesn't have to repeat it every time, but that is the basis of his offering. Same, just for the time being, whatever was fulfilled by the Guru is now fulfilled by Srila Prabhupada and by the senior Vaishnavas. Right? So they replace, for the time being, the position of Guru. But that's an emergency. So in emergency, there is always room to make adjustment. This is called apadharma. Apadharma means that there are emergency adjustments that are possible, right, in the normal standard. But the thing about apadharma is it may not become the regular standard. So if it's a regular standard, then it is not so good. Still, it must be a natural thing that a relationship with a new spiritual master would develop, and it cannot develop by force. So it may take time. And but somewhere along the line, you know, some people, they doubt and doubt and doubt, you know, what if he will fall down, what if he will fall down. Meanwhile, usually they fall down. Yeah? They usually fall down. Right? Because how can we go on with that shelter? So we shouldn't be too worried. Will he fall down? Will he not fall down? If we are investigating and we're quite sure that he will not fall down because he's a serious follower, then we should just take the risk. And even if he does fall down, it's painful. It's painful. But it's not the end of the world. One goes on again with spiritual life. Yes.
About if the guru is in good standing, and so if it is, and the guru asks the disciple to do something, and the disciple just comes to with God's surrender,
then he should bring it back. That disciple should bring that back to the spiritual master. One should not just quietly keep that to himself. But if one can't take the order of the spiritual master, one should just tell it to the spiritual master. Then the spiritual master can adjust the order. And then one is relieved from the offense. If one keeps it quiet, and one is just ignoring the order, I can't follow it, it's too much, what can I do? But then one lives in offense. But if one takes it back to the spiritual master, and that gives the spiritual master the opportunity to adjust the order, then one is relieved from the offense.
It's the same with dealing
mind. Yeah. So one should not be ashamed. One should really have that kind of trust that I can reveal my mind to my spiritual master, whatever it may be, right? Because he's my well-wisher. So I can trust him that he's my ever well-wisher. Yeah.
What do you say? Do you have again?
Kali adosa nide raja asti heko mahatguna. That's what I would say. You know, this age of Kali is an ocean of faults, right? And somewhere in the middle of this ocean of faults, the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya has appeared. So, if under the present circumstances, after you've had 7 spiritual masters, you have some doubts about taking number 8 and think maybe this time I'm not going to sit in the fire, that like, I will say, all right, you do it with siksha for the time being. You go for siksha. If you can't sit down again in the fire, if you don't feel so fired up, that I can appreciate that and say, go for siksha. I think Lord Chaitanya also has a heart. Yeah, I did it once, and it was quite an odd thing to do. It wasn't so easy, and I did that after 17 years, and then I had to sit with the new bhaktas, and it was a little difficult. It's like, that's a little intense for my mind. Huh? It's like, and I had to take off my Brahmin thread, and that was also really weird. I was trying to go to the bathroom and put it around my ear, couldn't find it. Where's my thread? Huh? Couldn't find my thread. And then, of course, with Jaya Advaita Maharaj, you know, he's as good as God, right? There's no doubt about that, right? So I wasn't so sure if he was going to give me the second initiation right away or not. I wasn't so sure. So it's not a light thing, obviously. But it works very well. And now I have... Now I have a new spiritual master, one could say, and have a good relationship. And now my previous spiritual master is also in spiritual life and doing quite well, and I meet him. And although officially he's not my spiritual master now, he's still my spiritual master. And he's still, in a way, he still is, you know. That relationship is still there. It's not just gone, right? It's just gone. And he still treats me like he always did, you know. All the externals are not there now, the bowing down and the flowers and all that, but he doesn't care, right? But, you know, he I used to say that, you know, I told that story that I had heavy malaria in India and I was really skinny, I'd lost 10 kilos and was sitting there like totally feeling sorry for myself that I'd been so sick on a chair, and he walked past and said, "You are so sinful." Right? Meaning to say, you know, stop feeling so sorry for yourself, you know. You're just sinful. That's where you're getting this. So he's right. He's right. So he still has that kind of cutting approach, you know, that he had then. Like, I initiated someone in Sydney, right? A Dutch boy, actually, and his name was Patrick before, and I called him Padmanabha. So, Padmanabha. Yeah. So Bhavananda came later and he said, "So, what's the name?" I said, "Padmanabha." I said, "It's a nice name." He said, "I like that name." He said, "Oh, you know, you like some names of Krishna and others you don't? Some names are better." Chop, you know. So he's still doing it to me, you know, as an example, right? He's still doing it. That relationship is always there, I guess.
That's nice, though,
that
you don't think about you.
So I have two now, actually. I have two. But, of course, my current spiritual master is now my Diksha Guru. And he is absolute. And my previous Diksha Guru has now become my Siksha Guru. That's what happened. But, and then there are two kinds of Siksha Gurus. There are Siksha Gurus who one takes as absolute as the Diksha Guru, or there are other types of Siksha Gurus who will give us relevant instruction, but ultimately the direction of the Diksha Guru is the basis of our life. Okay, time's flying, so let us end here.